Hello, listeners. Thanks for tuning in to the Chats That Matter podcast, the only podcast exclusively for employees of Cincinnati Bell, Inc. That's CBTS, Onyx, Hawaiian Telecom, and, of course, Cincinnati Bell. A few weeks ago, Senior Communications and Media Relations Manager Josh Pickler and I were lucky to snag some airtime with CBTS President Jeff Lackey. A native Hoosier, Jeff chatted with us about his experience as an entrepreneur and how he is using his past to help drive a successful future for CBTS. So without further ado, let's settle in and take a listen. Everybody, thank you so much for joining us here at Chats That Matter. We are so pleased to have in the podcast studio conference room, Jeff Lackey, president of CBTS. So welcome.
Thank you.
Well, just to kick us off, there are a lot of folks outside of the CBTS organization who have not yet had the chance to meet you or hear from you. Why don't you just tell us about yourself? You know, where are you from? Where you went to college?
Sure.
Whatever you'd like to share.
I'll start kind of with school, just to give you an idea how old I am. I graduated in 1982 from IU, Kelley School of Business. Thought I wanted to be an accountant. Figured out that I didn't really like that as a profession. Graduated with a marketing degree. And then the first job that I got out of school was in computers. So sort of a varied background. Grew up in Indianapolis. Actually lived in Cincinnati for 5 years, about 15 years ago. But mostly a Hoosier all my life. Have been an entrepreneur for the most part, is how I would describe myself, saving actually this current stint with CBTS. Three kids, two dogs, a wife, kind of a normal everyday Hoosier, I guess is the way I would describe myself.
I like that. Go Hoosiers. So career path, you know, you said you graduated from college and kind of went into computers. But how did you get into sales and IT services?
Way back in the day, there was this concept of a PC kind of was born. And I was working at a bank and became technical. One of my responsibilities was our users would call what we back then called the information center and would want to ask them, what is it that you need to do your job? You know, what are the kind of things you're going to be doing, et cetera. So mostly my initial foray into that was to understand how to apply technology or solutions at the time, which were things that don't even exist anymore, WordPerfect and Lotus and those sort of things, to help them do their business job and perform the functions that they were hired to do. And so from there, I learned technology is important, but it's really how the individual that's going to use it will apply it to their needs and solve it that way. And then a few friends of mine left to go to a PC reseller, and they called me and said, "Hey, Jeff, we need somebody that can come in and do that translation." Mm-hmm. They were sales guys. They had customer needs, and they wanted somebody that could kind of fit that middleware to understand requirements and come up with solutions. And so that's how I got into it. They were paid a lot more than I was. And once I figured out how much they got paid, I thought, and I'm the one sort of kind of doing a lot of the hard stuff, I guess I'll try that avenue too. And so I started selling a little bit. And then over time, I realized that to really achieve, you know, financial security and those kind of things that I was aspiring to, I thought starting my own business might make some sense, you know, keep more of the dollars that I'm helping bring in the door. And that's how I got into launching a business and became an entrepreneur.
Can you talk a little bit about that process just of launching the business? What did you have to have in terms of capital? What did you have to have in terms of customers? Because that's, you know, a huge reward, but also that's a big risk. A lot of people fail at that.
Right. It really sort of evolved. I had been in the business workforce for maybe 10 years, but most of the roles that I had been in when I moved from being inside of a bank, as an example, providing working in an information services department to going to an organization that sold technology for their business. And then I became somebody to help them sell that technology or solve those problems. I got exposed to a lot of customers. You know, so I spent a great deal of time in front of customers. And over the course of time, you kind of figure out that while there's a bunch of unique things that occur, there's also some very repeatable, commonsensical sort of things of how people need technology. So my exposure to customers was critical because once I decided that I wanted to go do this for myself and I set up shop, grand total of $50,000, had some seed capital given to me as an investment by a group of individuals. I went to market and they already knew me from my prior history. I didn't have a non-compete, which was always helpful. So I just started calling on those customers again. And what I learned was the most valuable thing that sometimes we overlook in the business world is that relationship with your customer. So when I said, hey, you know, you knew me over here and we solved problems together underneath this banner, I now have my own company, you know, would you trust in me to continue to provide you the kind of advice and service that you have learned that I can do over time? They did. And that's how I launched my business, which was very scary. Had I known what I was getting into, I never would have done it. Because, you know, making payroll and making sure things happen and collecting the cash from your customers and competing and all those types of things, you don't really learn about that in business school. And you really don't see that when you're working for somebody else. It just is sort of there. Mm-hmm. But when it's yours, it becomes very real and a lot of sleepless nights. But having gone through that experience and launched my own company and had some success with it, it really has prepared me mm-hmm. for the role really that I'm in today with CBTS, just based on the things that I learned and how I go about conducting, you know, our team here in terms of what we're trying to accomplish.
Was it just you when you started, or did you have a group of employees?
Yeah, it was just me. But I had three guys, all about my age, that we had sort of grown up together in the industry. They were technical folks, and they trusted me to make sure that, you know, back in the day, what I would tell the customer we were going to do for them, that we actually were able to do it, and that these were going to be the individuals that were going to be doing it. So, you know, the balance between making commitments to a customer and turning around and understanding how you're going to deliver it in a way that's meaningful to the customer as well as the people that are there to do it for you, so I don't overextend them, I don't make them work off hours, all those kind of things. That bond and that confidence that occurs is really what helped us grow the business, because once I had my three amigos that sort of bought into what we're doing and why we're doing it, then they could help go recruit other folks that were like them, like-minded, and it just sort of snowballed over time. And again, really what it got down to is having the right people with the right skills focused on the kind of things that our customers needed at the time and, you know, convincing them that we were the right organization to provide that service.
What was the conversation like with your family and your wife when you decided to start your own company?
It was scary. I had a mortgage payment, two car payments, two kids in diapers. And I left a very well-paying job to go start my own deal. And yeah, my wife was actually kind of cool about it. She just said, look, if that's what makes you happy, go do it. Just make sure that mortgages are paid, you know, all those kind of things.
That's awesome. Shout out to your wife on, you know, International Women's Day. So
no, I mean, it's a team sport. You know, I wasn't around a lot early on just because you're working all manner of hours. You know, there was never enough hours in a day. So a lot of the child rearing duties kind of fell to her, but, you know, weekends and those kind of things. So I would come home, and actually we lived apart. She was in Cincinnati while I was starting this business in Indianapolis, and I would drive back on weekends, and then she would hand the kids off to me, and then she'd go out and have some fun. And that 9 months was a really hard time on all of us, but it turned out to be, you know, the right decision. And so we all had some skin in the game.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. So that dovetails perfectly into our next question. So your experience as an entrepreneur, how has that kind of shaped your executive priorities with CBTS?
I think anybody that's seen anything written about me, PowerPoints or presentations that I've made, I always start with the customer perspective. And the reason that I do that is when it's your company and that customer that you're trying to win that allows you to make payroll and to feed mm-hmm. your kids and all those kind of things, they can choose to spend money with anybody that they wish. And so I had to convince them that I was the right guy and the right company to do that business with. And they held the keys, which was the revenue for my company, for us to be successful. That has never left my mindset, because even though we're a much larger organization and we have a lot of customers, those customers can go do business with anybody they want. So the way I translate that into how I set priorities at CBTS is that any decision that our management team and our people want to make should have the customer in the middle of it. What's good for the customer is going to be good for us. And if we do things that aren't good for the customer, it's not going to be good for the business. And unfortunately, what happens, the larger an organization gets and those sort of things, sometimes a customer loss here or there doesn't resonate fully, but if it can become a trend if you're not paying attention. So, you know, what we talk a lot about in the management meetings are the decisions that we want to make around spending money, hiring people, firing people sometimes mm-hmm. is it in the best interest of what we're doing for our customers?
Do you have any specific priorities that you'd like to share for CBTS, kind of what it would say in the next year, kind of at that outlook?
You know, for the most part, number one priority is we have a business plan that we have to go hit. Mm-hmm. And that business plan, you know, has top line considerations. It has profitability considerations. And as a leader and as a leader with the leadership team, we all have to make judgments and calls about how we use the resources available to mm-hmm. us to go affect those plans. I think that we will continue to add new products to what is that we do. Mm-hmm. We're trying to focus on our existing customer relationships and sell them other things. One of the things that I learned over time is getting a new customer is really, really hard. Getting that customer to buy something from you for the first time is very difficult. Getting them to buy the second thing from you is easier. Mm-hmm. So we have lots of customer relationships and we have a very broad product portfolio. So what I'm asking the sales teams to do is to take all the other things that we offer, go look at their customers, see where we have white space, meaning where they're not doing business with us today, mm-hmm. and go talk about those offerings. That's the quickest path to revenue. And because we do, for the most part, deliver excellent value in what it is that we offer, if we can just have those frank conversations, demonstrate to the customer that we're capable and that we have their best mm-hmm. interest in heart, and this is going to work for everybody, you know, I think we should be successful delivering our 2020 plan.
One thing I wanted to circle back to is I've worked here for a little over 5 years, 5.5 years. And I've never been totally clear on how CBTS started. Tell us that story, because I understand you were instrumental
in it. Really, I talked about starting my own business, and I started that business when I lived in Cincinnati. I worked for a company called The Future Now way, way back in the day. And I started a business in my hometown of Indianapolis because I dealt with a lot of customers over there. I grew that company for 4 years and I decided to sell it. And the company that I sold it to was Cincinnati Bell Telephone. And we called the business Cincinnati Bell Technology Solutions, CBTS. And so that's how CBTS got started. The Cincinnati Bell Telephone brand went off and bought a company in the early, I think it was 2000, and it was called Broadwing. And that's not necessarily mm-hmm. a bright spot on the history of the company, right. But that organization, when it sort of disaggregated the CBTS operation, we had grown to $175 million. We were in 10 markets and the leadership at the time, after the Broadwing, kind of meltdown, decided they wanted to keep the Cincinnati branch offering of CBTS. Mm-hmm. And so I bought everything else that wasn't in Cincinnati back from them. And that's where the CBTS came from, because once you start getting out of market, Cincinnati Bell doesn't really resonate. So that's why they shortened it to CBTS. And then Scott Seeger hired me back in 2016 because the company was looking to do an expansion strategy acquisition, mm-hmm. But I'd spent a lot of my career doing that. So I rejoined to help him with that responsibility.
That's very cool. It's all very full circle.
Very full circle.
And I admit, I didn't know that either.
So that's what makes it such an easy step into Scott's shoes, because a lot of the folks on the 12th floor I hired 20 years ago. I mean, I've known him for eons. Most of the folks in this, we've known each other for 25 to 30 years. Christy, I've known for 25 years. So
that's pretty cool.
It's a very comfortable setting. And again, I think it just allows some confidence for all of us to know how we're going to go do the things that we do and some trust in each other that we're going to do it the right way.
In between the time you left CBTS the first time and came back, what were you doing, I guess, running the business?
I acquired it. As I said, I bought all the non-Cincinnati branch operations, if you will, and I privatized those in 2003. And we actually called ourselves Core BTS. I was trying to come up with something. I was going to keep the business technology solution, so I was looking for a C. So I came up with Core, and then we shortened it to Core BTS, and I operated that for 3 years, then sold it to an equity company who had three standalone businesses they acquired, and then we rolled those up underneath my business because we were multi-platform, multi-site. And I ran that for 3 years for them, retired for a couple years in 2009 just to kind of slow down a little bit. Got bored, went into invested in a software company. I was a bolt-on to Salesforce, did that for 3 years. That's a whole nother challenge. It was interesting, very interesting. I learned a lot. And then the timing of Scott catching me on a March of 2016 and what they were looking to do, it just fit with what I felt I could offer the company. And again, it was very comfortable since I knew everybody. And so that's what I rejoined doing.
Can you talk a little bit about your management style and leadership style? What do you, how do you interact with, you know, your executive team?
I think it probably depends upon who you ask. I'm a very practically minded individual. I speak very plainly. And when I request, I try to get folks to understand where it is we're trying to go. And I do solicit feedback on what's the best way to get there. But a leader oftentimes is in the situation where a decision has to be made. That, you know, you might get a consensus, but the consensus is between two options. And so leadership is, for me, to select the option that you feel like you can get people to follow you and embrace, but ultimately leads to positive outcomes. And so, again, I guess I would say I'm pretty direct. You know, I'm kind of black and white. I do like data. I do like to understand the details behind a decision, but a lot of times those decisions aren't black and white, they're gray. And so I try to make sure people understand the logic behind it. And I think as people, as we all get to know each other, the confidence there is there that allows us to say, maybe we don't have full support of a particular action or decision, but here's the reasons why this particular one makes more sense than another one. And when we make mistakes, you make another decision, you know, you don't let your ego get involved that, hey, well, that was my decision. That was my deal. You know, I'm going to back it until the bitter end. You know, it is, you know, sometimes you make a bad decision. And, you know, to me, the mark of a good organization is when you learn from them and you don't make them again, but you fix the bad ones.
You could probably work 24/7 if you really wanted to.
Not at my age.
But how do, sounds how like do you, retirement didn't stick, so, you know.
Never retire.
In terms of how do you evaluate when you really need to get involved in a situation and when you need to step back and let your management team figure it out, just so you're not, you know, micromanaging or getting involved where you don't need to be involved?
Well, I use a phrase, it's called getting all the liars in a room. And the way my style is slightly different, as I found. I'm not too much of a fan of a bunch of one-off discussions. My leadership meetings that we have is everybody in the room. And what it gives me the opportunity to do is to get the same set of facts, people hearing them the same way at the same time, and then we discuss them. And, you know, out of it, there's usually follow-up activities or an individual or two may take a responsibility that they're going to run with and back report. But we pretty much do all of that in a single meeting. Now, there might be an occasion where it's a personnel issue, it's sensitive or whatever, where we may do a one-off. But I'm a firm believer of having everybody listen to the same set of facts at the same time and get concurrence or not. That way, when people run off and sometimes and run their little pet projects or have their own little versions of them, you can bring them right back together and go, wait a minute, that's not what we talked about.
Yeah.
That's not what the discussion was. That's not actually how it went down. Let's revisit that. And so that's kind of how we operate. And, you know, I'm encouraging everybody to feel comfortable raising their hand in a meeting and, you know, calling out a particular issue if they see it, because that way it eliminates the BS factor that can go on as you get in a larger organization.
Yeah. So I actually just have one more question, kind of going back to priorities and leadership and things like that. You know, one of the biggest issues facing the tech industry today, and I think it's a big issue for many reasons, but it also has a really particularly bright spotlight on it right now, over the last couple of years, is diversity and inclusion within the tech space. And CBTS, I think from an internal standpoint, you know, we hear the little subtle jabs of, well, we're very male, we're very white, we're very this. Well, we know that very much. But in terms of priorities, you know, is that something that you're looking to, you know, create a plan around moving forward?
Sure.
Making that a priority?
No, that's a great point, because it is true. It is a very white male, 30 to 50, well, in my case, almost 60, dominated industry. And although we have instances of where that's not the case, mm-hmm. you know, one of our longstanding relationships, Dayton Public Schools, is a situation where we've got 30 roughly people that support that school district. Half of them are people of color. Mm-hmm. Three of them are LGBTQ. Mm-hmm. And when I queried why that was the case, it was the district basically said, we would like to see a third of the workforce that supports our mm-hmm. school system diverse.
Yeah.
And so they set a standard for us that we over time work to achieve. It didn't happen by accident. It happened because we actually looked and evaluated until we found candidates. I recently met with a guy that I've known for years and years over in Indianapolis, probably 20 years, and he leads a very, very large staffing firm, and he's a person of color. And I met with him actually last week, and he led a search as an example for his alma mater, and it turned out to be an African-American lady. And when mm-hmm. I asked him how that occurred, he goes, it wasn't by accident. You know, we interviewed 40 candidates, and mm-hmm. we really wanted to bring someone diverse, and we made it a priority, and we had to search nationally to find this person, but we were able to do so. So I think for CBTS, I want to think of it in terms of when we have open opportunities, we need to look outside mm-hmm. the organization. It's always easier to fill inside the organization, which I think you always want to promote from within. But I think we have to open our minds up and look outside the organization to bring new lines of thinking in. This gentleman that I referenced, he has a very diverse organization. And, you know, one of the things that he quoted a few statistics on that I want to get quantified mm-hmm. is the effectiveness of an organization that has a diverse sure. Workforce. Tends to be high performing. You look mm-hmm. at a Google as an example, that kind of an organization that maybe takes it a little too extreme with some of the things that they allow. But, you know, I think that's just something that we've got to make a priority, and I intend on doing our part. But I think we also already have some pockets where we have had some success. We just need to figure out how to maybe expand that.
We need to highlight some of those a little bit more, because I think from an internal standpoint, you know, so part of what my team does is, you know, we administer all of the pulse surveys. We're mm-hmm. constantly grinding through data. We're doing the, you know, feedback analysis live. You know, Josh helps to administer all of the skip level meetings. And I think it's really easy for people to kind of pile on, if you will. You know, they say, oh, look at this. Like, you know, another man just got promoted, or another white person just got promoted. And I think it's easy for people to kind of cabbage onto that, and it becomes very toxic. But, you know, when you talk about Dayton Public Schools, that to me is very interesting. I had no idea. And I guarantee you that there are folks listening to this podcast that have no idea. There are people who are going to completely miss this podcast who have no idea. But whatever that, you know, ushers in that change, the important thing is that it's changing and that you're making it a priority, which I think is very encouraging.
Well, thank you. I would also just underscore that it's all about qualifications too. I mean, that's
absolutely.
That's part of whoever we bring to the organization has to be qualified for the role.
Absolutely.
Now, there are things I think that we can do to help create qualifications and groom people for that. So when we need to make that a thoughtful, intentional thing that we do inside of the business, which we will do. And I do believe that we can mm-hmm. use how the Dayton Public School program evolved as a way to model that.
Yeah, definitely.
But you know, again, I've never been, I don't red, green, yellow, blue. I don't care. As if you do a good job, you work hard, you service our customers. Those are the type of people that are successful here.
That's awesome. And it's that word intention. Intentionality, I think, is so key. So do you have any more questions, Josh?
What do you do when you're not at work? What do you do to unwind and have fun?
I play golf. I enjoy golf. It's sort of the beauty I like about the game is the individualism of it. You know, if you hit a bad shot, it's nobody to blame but yourself. You can play against the game. You don't have to play against somebody else, which is the purest aspect of it that I enjoy. And, you know, I've used it as a great business tool over the years. You know, you spend 4.5 hours on a golf course in a cart with a customer. You learn a lot about them, mm-hmm. honesty, integrity, all the things that, you know, are the hallmarks mm-hmm. of golf. Diligence, patience, you know, all those types of things that are the, you know, life skills that golf allows you to develop. Two dogs, walk the dogs a lot. I stay pretty active. My wife and I stay pretty active, but, you know, not much of a socialite, that sort of thing. So kind of a homebody.
What kind of dogs do you have?
Yellow Lab male and a Siberian Husky male.
See, those are the burning questions that our listeners will ask us. So I'm glad you said that. Well, thank you so much. We are going to get you out of here. But Jeff Lackey, President at CBTS, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for the time.
As always, thanks for listening to the Chats That Matter podcast. This episode was hosted by Annette DiTomaso and Josh Pickler, with editing and production by Matt Mulcahy. Special thanks to our guest, Jeff Lackey. If you have any questions, comments, or thoughts, please send us an email at ctmpodcast@sinbell.com.